To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Welcome, everyone, to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
What's up, everybody? You know that song. You know this voice. It's your boy, Rook. Joining me, as always, is the man that makes everything happen, Mr. Don Moore.
Hello, everybody.
And we've got not just one, but we've got two amazing creators for you guys to talk to. First, let's say hello to Ryan Kroboth.
How's it going?
And we've got John Eddingfield II as well.
How you doing?
Man, guys, thank you so much for coming on to the show. You guys, you do a bunch of stuff. Got chatting with Ryan on Kickstarter. John, I saw the link off of his, came to yours. Back both. Then I started finding you guys have this amazing amount of work available, a lot of anthologies as well. What makes you guys do this? What makes you create the comic books that you do?
John's first.
Oh, all right. I've got I'm broken, really, is what it boils down to. And it, I have always wanted to create. I always have these weird stories, in my mind. I've written a bunch of them down. I met Ryan, and we just kind of fuel each other's creativity. We both have similar family backgrounds, although I'm about 10 years older than him, so it's kind of like a little brother, with like anthologies, you have all of these different little stories that you want to tell and you don't have anywhere to put them. An anthology makes that possible. But we started making our own little comics first and then kind of branched out into anthologies after that, kind of getting our names out there. It's really just, it comes from this desire to create, and for me, it's cathartic. When I am drawing, when I'm creating, when I'm writing, I'm in a zone that I can't even explain. It's like the best place to be. I feel at peace. And if I could do it 24/7, I would, I have other responsibilities. I got a day job, I got a family, but so that's kind of how I come to it, is it's really a drive, a desire to create.
Nice.
That's a good answer.
I like it. Ryan, what brought you to comic books?
Well, we started with John first because his answer was profound. I was a poor kid and paper was cheap. So I would draw stuff all the time. I would play video games and then I would draw characters from the video games. I would draw stuff from my favorite comics, draw Wolverine and then write the word fingers. I created this character, it was good stuff. But over time, when you look more into it and learn more about the craft, it is such a challenging storytelling form, and the challenge really drives me. The whole concept of storytelling, drawing is hard just to begin on its own, and then when you work in telling a cohesive story that can resonate with other people, it's one of the most difficult things you can try to do with your art. So it's fun. I think the storytelling aspect of art is very enjoyable.
Nice. John, you mentioned anthologies, and I'm very curious because we've talked to a few people with anthologies and their funding just doesn't hit. What is it that is different for the books that you guys work on anthology wise that you think, what's your secret sauce behind it?
Well, a lot of the anthologies that I've been part of weren't my own. I ran one anthology on my own, and it was highly successful. It was the most funding that I had done on Kickstarter. All the other anthologies were from people that I had already known or got connected with in comics. But I can tell you from my first anthology, and from the ones that I've been part of, what makes them highly successful is to have an already baked-in audience that wants that thing. So, like the very first anthology that Ryan and I were actually part of was Russell Nolte's Cthulhu Is Hard to Spell, it had already had a built-in audience of people who love Cthulhu. So H.P. Lovecraft is huge. He's got a huge drawing, him and Robert Howard, any of the people that dabble in the Lovecraftian mythology. You know, there's a fervent cultic fan base for that.
Yes.
So,
much.
You know, when you do an anthology in that genre, it could be silly and comical, like some of the stories were in the anthology, and it could be very serious. People just love it no matter what, because it has some form of the Cthulhu mythos in it. My anthology that I did, Not So Fair Tales, drew on the same format. There's a huge fan base for fairy tales. People love the fairy tale genre. I wanted to do something that was reminiscent of the fractured fairy tales that I watched as a kid. That's my granddaughter. Hold on, Kathy. That I watched as a kid, and I lost my train of thought. So when I did the Not So Fair Tales one, I wanted to focus on the fairy tale aspect, but to twist it. So the stories weren't the tradition. You had to use a public domain fairy tale, but you could make it in any way that you wanted. You know, and it was highly successful because it had a huge following already. Soup to nuts, one of the biggest things for an anthology is actually getting it made. You know, getting it funded is very difficult too, but getting it made is really, really hard. You're dealing with creative people, and that's like herding cats.
Yes, know, it is.
It's near impossible. So, you know, you have.
He's trying to hint at me over here.
you and everybody else in the creative world. No problem.
I had 39 creative people working on the book, you know, and some people are very organized, and some people are exactly what you would think an artist would be like, and just. Yeah. All over the map. And so that's the first challenge is figuring out what's your genre and how are you going to make it, right? And then launching it to that fan base.
So Ryan, you make a joke that he's pointing at you in regards to this. You're are you one of his cats that he has to herd in, or?
Absolutely, all the time.
So now with your book Sunmaker, which heartbreakingly didn't get it, you're gonna come back. You're gonna do it again. Right?
Yep, we're going right. In 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today. Fantastic. All right. So wait, what's the date on that so we can tell everybody?
Should be March 29th.
March 29th. Guys, everybody listening, March 29th. If it's already past March 29th, get on Kickstarter.
I have a question about that. Is there anything you're going to do differently on this next campaign that you wish you had done on the first one?
Not that I necessarily wish that I would have done on the first one. I've run all my campaigns fairly similar. Which is kind of nice because it gives me a template. It makes it so I'm not stressing out about the campaign. Like, you know, what am I going to post tonight? What am I going to post as an update?
Right.
The only things that I'm doing differently for the new campaign is, since I'm cutting back the print run significantly, I was going to have a little bit more like being able to print variants, not have to worry about it. Now I'm going to have to micromanage what I'm doing a little bit more, because with only 50 books and to try to split it up across a couple different tiers and also be able to try to have them on as add-ons. So that way somebody wants to just get like one book and one variant cover, like they would be able to have the options, because that was something that came through. I didn't initially do on my first campaign. Had a couple people message me on the side and ended up adding it in like a couple days into the campaign.
I see.
Yeah.
Now, for those listening, we're talking about the book Sunmaker. Can you give us just a brief synopsis of what the book is about?
So it's a post-apocalyptic fantasy about a man who must decide if preserving his legacy is worth becoming a monster.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I ran across it on Kickstarter, and I was like, oh, this looks cool. I'm going to put this to the side. I'll get back to this. And then just like days later, I see Ryan Clater post it, and I'm going, hey, wait a minute. That sounds familiar. I go and open up my windows again. I'm like, yeah, it's right here. All right, I'm in.
That's cool.
It's
funny how, like, you know, you'll see something once and you're like, this is pretty awesome. And then you do exactly that. You're like, all right. But when it pops up a second time, you're like, all right, that means something. Like, now I got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, off of your Kickstarter, I find John's, which, John, your book, Rancidville, this looks like Scooby-Doo meets, like, the Oddlings. It just looks out there. Give us your synopsis.
Yeah, it's three teens in a decrepit town investigate a greedy town council to solve a murder mystery. Boom, I nailed it.
7 years. Now you just gotta keep rewatching this clip, and then you'll be able to get your pitch down.
Yeah, every time I've given that pitch, it's been a different way, and that's the way it's supposed to be, right there.
All right, we got it.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, it's like Scooby-Doo meets the Goonies, almost. I guess it's
That's how we pitch it at shows.
That's how we pitch it at shows. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah,
great. It's actually one. It's finished now. Well, like Ryan's, his was three books. Mine was originally just one story with six chapters. And Ryan convinced me when we first started launching to launch it in pieces. So the first two chapters are in book one, book two is the next two chapters, and book three are the last two chapters. So, but it was originally just going to be one book, one story, and I wasn't going to launch it until it was finished. But, you know, I launched the first one in 2017, so it would have been a long time coming if I waited until now to finish the whole book, you know.
Yeah. So have you guys launched? Because you guys launched on the same day together.
Yeah, we launched every project together.
Every project together. That's awesome. I absolutely love this. The first time I came across creators launching the same time was Crit and Bigfoot Knows Karate. And I'm starting to see I've been diving deeper and deeper into Kickstarter because the local comic book shop doesn't do it for me anymore.
Right.
I'm just feeding this big engine. I feel like that I'm not even riding on the train. At least with Kickstarter, I get to fund creators that look like they're doing awesome stuff and having fun and doing it for joy and just the love of it. So I'm finding more and more creators launching at the same time. Do you guys find that beneficial for you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We started this when we launched my first Rancidville book and the first Sunmaker book. We decided to launch on the same day. We were taking the comics launch course with Tyler James on Comics Tribe. And we were trying to figure out some type of promotional way to help each other out. And, you know, there's a lot of creators that do cross promotion where they'll launch their project and then they'll look for projects that are similar to their project or have a similar audience. And then they'll try to trade, you know, promotional updates or whatever to try to cross pollinate their campaigns with their fan bases. You know, Ryan and I just decided instead of just doing that, let's just launch together and spend our time promoting each other. You know, and And it worked, and it's worked it, up until just recently. And not for nothing, Ryan wasn't very far from his goal. He would have funded if I had like one more minute. It's been very successful up and, you know.
Yeah, but like back then, we weren't even telling the group that we were planning to do this. I think we were just like, look, we've been friends for a long time, and like, you know, we're trying to push each other's projects, like. And then everybody's like, oh my God, they're like, this is so cool. Like they didn't realize that we were like so close friends. Like,
right.
But when we were doing all this, like the feedback and stuff in the comics launch group.
So do you guys feed back and forth when you're working on books too? Hey, what do you think of this? What do you think of that?
All the time.
Perfect unison answer. You can tell these guys work together on stuff.
As a matter of fact, one of the incentives on your campaign, you two were doing a book together.
Yep.
Yes.
And here's my question. It looked nice, but it did state that this is the only time anyone's going to be able to get this book. And my question was, that's nice, but I don't know. If I had done work like that, I would eventually want a bigger audience to see it, maybe. But that's it?
No. What we were offering, our cross-promotional gift, which we're still going to give. So anybody that backed both of our campaigns at the physical level is going to get the 14-page Kickstarter preview of our newest project. So we're working on a series called Worse Than Mayhem, and they would get this 14-page preview. So the very basically the first 14 pages of a 52-page first issue.
Oh.
Get those four, that in a printed Kickstarter exclusive version, so that it had a I made a Kickstarter cover for it with the Kickstarter logo crushing a guy at the launch party and. So that's what that is that we wanted to put, because as soon as we fulfill our campaigns, Ryan's going to launch his the end of this month, and we're basically going to still be fulfilling at the same time, which is what we also do together, is when our campaigns are ready, we get together and fulfill together. So we'll send one package to a person that backed both of our campaigns instead of each of us sending a package out. They'll get all of their rewards from me and from Ryan in one box.
That's cool.
Yeah, we live close enough to do that. We're only about 40 miles from each other. So, so our goal is to. I'm probably talking more. You should be talking, right? Our goal is to.
If you want me to take over, I mean, I could go from here.
Yeah. Yeah. So our goal is to provide that book when we fulfill. So when they get it, they're like, oh, this is pretty awesome, Worst of Mayhem. And then the next month, Worst of Mayhem Kickstarter is launching. And so that'll be fresh in their mind. They're going to have this 14-page preview, ash can, really. And then we're going to launch the Kickstarter for the first issue. And we're hoping that all of the people that got it are going to go, hell yeah, I want that. And they're going to go on the Kickstarter right away and back.
Mm. Nice. We've done a cross promo reward for each of our campaigns. Our first campaign, we did a print where we were hanging out together. Like I drew a little bit, he drew a little bit, I drew a little bit, he drew a little bit, and then we inked it together. And then we ended up coloring that, and that was our first Kickstarter. This is like actually back before a lot of people were doing cross promo prints.
Right.
Now that's a pretty common practice. Where like, and then they'll draw like custom stuff for the campaigns, and if you back two campaigns, you get like a print. Because we were trying to keep it, you know, not too expensive, because it was our first campaign and we didn't want to, you know, be spending all kinds of money on tchotchkes and all kinds of extra stuff. You know, we were still worried about being able to get the book funded.
Right.
So on our second one, we did a collector's coin. We hired, John hired a 3D printer, and that was the same guy that did the ones for his first Kickstarter campaign. And we made a custom coin, so it had the sewer cap from the cover of issue 2 on one side, and when you flipped it over, it was the Sunmaker logo. And the only way to get it was if you backed both campaigns at a physical level. And John even had, like, really nice boxes for them and everything, man. Like, those things were done up nice.
Wow.
That's really cool.
We've been talking about it for almost 2 years. We're like, what do you want to do for the third Kickstarter? And, you know, we're just like, do you want to just do another coin? But it didn't really feel inspired. Like, you know, it already was something we were doing before. And I was just like, this might be crazy, but what do you think about just like tossing in an extra book?
Yeah. Everybody's doing coins and stuff now. I mean, I don't want to say that I was the first one, but I mean, I made a coin and no one was making coins, and I made a coin and now everybody's got some type of coin or token in their Kickstarter of some sort. So, you know, we wanted to do something really special. In addition, we're really stoked, or I am anyway, I know
Ryan,
about our newest project.
It's going to be okay.
it's something to do. Keeps me out of trouble.
Well, I think now with so many people having 3D printers, the ability to make stuff like that is so much more readily available. So, you know, how you said this was 2017 was the first one. What year was the second one?
Yeah, 2017. I made the first coin, and it wasn't plastic. It was actually made out of
metal,
out of aluminum. It was nickel coated aluminum, and
I could pull it out of the cabinet if you really
want. You could pull it out, right?
So this thing was printed?
It was. Like, I made it. Yeah, I had it made. There's a company called Shapewave that'll do.
Yeah.
They'll make it out of any material as long as the file is sound. You know, so I had a 3D artist create it. And then I actually drew it and then sent it to the artist. And then he created the 3D imagery for it. And then I sent the object file to Shapewave. And they printed it.
Oh wow!
I had it made in the silver dollar size, so I bought silver dollar plastic cases that they fit in.
Oh yeah,
really nice. Nice. I didn't even have one of the first ones. After I made them, Shapeways changed their quality control, I guess, and they said that file can no longer be printed. It's too fine a detail. Even though they printed it the first time, they won't make it again. So I only made enough to fulfill the first campaign. I don't even have one.
Mm. Man.
So I rub it in all the time that I got it.
That's right. That's about going and stealing my daughter. My daughter has one. I'll go take hers.
Yeah. There you go. Well, with the comic, I guess all I was thinking was, well, I saw it. It was nice work. And I thought, what if somebody finds you guys a few years later and says, I love this work, and they can't get it because the campaign was over. But my whole dilemma was completely not, because it's going to be a project later. It just won't be that one packaging.
So that cover design is only for that campaign.
Right.
It was exclusive to the Kickstarter. And like I said, it's just the first 14 pages. We figured out in our story, we weren't sure how many pages at first it was going to be, but we figured out where there was a nice break in the story that you would add a to be continued, you know, thing on it. And then, you know, we can get those printed up. And, you know, that's all that portion of it is all out of pocket, you know.
Yeah,
we're just doing it because we want our fans to get something nice, and we want them to come back and actually back the campaign when it goes live. You know.
Yeah. So. That makes sense. Makes total sense. Give them a taste and let them come on back for more.
Yeah. First taste is free.
If you don't mind, I would like to hear a little bit more about this project you two did, where you both wrote and drew it in different parts and inked it together. What was that like?
Well, so I'm doing the line art, and Ryan is doing all the coloring.
Okay.
And we wrote it together. And basically, we wrote it in stream of consciousness. Ryan would wake up in the middle of the night, or I would, and we would text each other bits of we thought would go in the story. And then I would scribble it down into the story Bible. And then I would put it on a page, and then we'd move stuff around, and then we'd reread it, and we'd laugh, and then because it's really funny, and I like making funny stuff, you know.
Right.
So you know, if you read Rancidville, you'll understand, you know, or any of my other stuff. I just like I'm a big fan of humor, but I'm also a fan of fantasy and D&D and you know, yeah.
D&D.
So I wanted to do something like that, but I didn't know that I wanted to do something like that. When we were talking about our next projects, I was doing some scribbles and stuff of dragons and barrels and swords and just junk, you know, and I would show Ryan, and then he was like, well, what if we just put that into a story? And it kind of grew from there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it makes it, we're having so much, here's one of the things, I can only speak for myself, I can't speak for Ryan, although I hope that the sentiment is the same. When you're working with your best friend on something, it makes it so much more enjoyable. It's so fun. I mean, I look forward to each day a new text or a call, because we actually have a lot of video calls together, on what craziness we're going to come up with next for these characters. And it's just crazy stuff. It's just fucking nuts.
it's like the most random, it really is like stream of consciousness. And like we try to make each other laugh. And we're hoping that the enjoyment of that will end up coming through in the final product, and people are gonna see that and like really, really enjoy the book.
Yeah.
Nice.
Now, when you guys are working on your own books, do you give feedback on that to each other?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Sometimes when I'm not asked.
As I said, all the time.
Well, nobody likes to work in a vacuum. I mean, nobody I've known. When you're working with somebody else and you get some feedback, even if you're working solo and you want it your way, getting a sounding board really helps, you know. And also if somebody's, you know, giving you another, it might take you down another avenue. And I'm just curious about that. If you worked on a book together, wrote one together, and you know, preparing it together, what it would be like if you went to your separate projects. But
so we don't ever submit anything like for final. Well, at least I don't, until I get John's approval. John's the first guy that sees it before anybody.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't give me the thumbs up, like nobody else sees it yet until I get the thumbs up from John. If he tells me that it's good to go, then I feel like, okay, like, you know, sometimes it's very difficult to get like people that will give you honest feedback. We've never been like, our egos aren't attached to our work. So if John says, yo man, this isn't working, you know, you try this, and you know, we work together, and it always comes out better in the long run for it.
Yeah, I always have the philosophy of a yes and. I never say no. You know, it's more. Yeah. You know, Ryan will show me something and I'll go, oh, that's awesome. And what if you do this thing? And then I'll show Ryan something and he'll be like, oh, that sucks. And then, he'll do the same thing. He'll say, hey, that is so cool. But what if we push this way? And one of the best things is that Ryan doesn't let me be comfortable. I always tell everybody I ride on his coattails, and it's true. What I say, he has gentle pressure that is relentlessly applied, you know, and that's what he does. He's constantly pushing me out of my comfort zone, constantly pushing me to do something, you know, more than, you know, I would just sit and do a comic strip if it were, you know, but we're making comic books, you know.
Hey, John, this is great. Where's your background?
What?
If you're like, hey, John, this is great. Where's your background?
I used to do political cartoons for a newspaper 30 years ago. So, you know, it's that's where I come from.
Right.
Yeah, so you don't have the space for a lot of background and doing newspaper stuff. So.
Right.
I just use it as a reason to give him a hard time.
Yeah, always. He's always, oh, this is great, but where are they? Where are they?
Well, yeah, it makes the work richer. You know, I mean, if you're working,
exactly.
Some people can work solo and are fine, but most people, you need someone, an editor, a good friend, a spouse, somebody that will mention something. Oh, I didn't even think of that. I didn't see that. Because, you know, your nose is right to the grindstone when you're doing this all the time.
Right.
I was wanting to ask, what medium are you both working in?
What medium?
Yeah, I mean,
like traditionally or digital?
Traditionally? Are you doing
both.
Traditionally?
Digital.
Yeah, so up until, well, go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, so like I pretty much started off as a traditional artist, and I still do a lot of my work traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
When I first, if you see the covers for my comics, they're actually acrylic paintings. Like there's one in the background right behind me. That's the cover for the third book. It's an acrylic painting. And the reason why they're acrylic paintings is because when I did the first issue, we needed to submit a cover to put it on Comixology so people could download it.
Right.
And I didn't know how to digitally color at the time. So I was like, I can paint. I mean, like, all I need are paints. So I went out and I bought a canvas and painted the cover. And it wasn't too much longer after that, I ended up taking digital coloring because I knew if I was going to do the book that I wanted to do it myself because it's very expensive to outsource all the other stuff.
Yeah.
So I spent the money on a comic coloring from Comic Experience. And I'd pretty much never used Photoshop before that. So like the first time I flatted a page, it took like 13 hours or 16 hours. It was crazy. I told the teacher, he's like, that's way too long for how long it should take you to flat a page.
But how because many I was like, layers learning, did you have?
Just one. it was because like I didn't know how to add stuff to selections, cut it out, you know, what keys were doing what. So like if I would mess up trying to flat something, I didn't know how to fix it. So I would have to like cut the whole thing back. It was a night. Now I understand it, and it's
now he's the coloring god. Yeah.
so it was like slowly adding more things into the process. Like I took the coloring course, then I took a lettering course. After I took lettering, I took a digital inking course. John does like a lot of his pencils and inks digitally now. Like it depends on what I'm doing. Like I'll do a lot of my anthology work as digital inks. But I still really like putting the actual ink, the pen to the paper and giving it to people. That's the best part, like sending them the originals.
Yeah. So are all three of your covers acrylic paintings?
For Sunmaker, yes.
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
And
that's...
I own two of them.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he puts it as a reward. It's like the top tier on his campaign, and I always back that.
I'll can't afford this.
Well, Ryan, if you don't mind me asking, you're talking about taking the digital courses and stuff. What applications are you using for the digital work?
So for coloring, I use Photoshop.
Okay.
I have decided that I hate lettering. I just needed to do that for one issue to know that I'm happy with never having to letter anything ever again. And for like inking and stuff, I usually use Clip Studio.
Okay.
Yep.
Nice.
Now, when you were lettering, I mean, you were actually hand lettering the work, or were you typing?
No, it's digital lettering, so it's all done in Illustrator.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh man. So you're using Illustrator just for the lettering aspect, and you're doing all your color over in Photoshop.
Well, it makes sense, actually.
And then they taught us to combine them using InDesign.
Yeah.
What did you dislike about lettering, if you don't mind me asking?
It just takes so long. It feels very tedious.
Yeah, I
can understand that.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen, you know, people's work, and a professional will always look at it and says, you'd be really surprised how nice this would look with really nice lettering. This is before right. digital. This is the conventional days. But when you try to do the lettering, I mean, even if you spend time at it, there's an art to it and a design to it.
Yes.
And and besides just being able to place the word balloons where the reader can read it and not cover up everything, there's a lot of moving parts to lettering. I was just curious, and I didn't mean to bring up old wounds, Ryan. I do apologize.
Oh, no. It's all good.
Yeah.
Okay. I still hate Illustrator.
That's funny.
That's never gone away.
Illustrator is wonderful. We don't put down Adobe Illustrator on this program.
Illustrator is great. I love Illustrator.
Just a heads up, you're talking to two graphic artists, one of which that used to teach Illustrator and Photoshop.
It's very hard, and because I don't use it as often, it's very I get frustrated because when I go back and do something in Illustrator, I end up having to rewatch a lot of tutorials that I've watched in the past to follow the tutorials again. And so whatever I end up doing is probably the simplest thing for somebody that knows how to do it on a daily basis. It just takes me like half a day. And then I just get mad because I've spent, instead of doing something creative, I'm like trying to figure out how to put like a gradient in a box in Illustrator. And I'm like,
You just described living in a modern world today.
Technology hates me.
Yeah.
Topography is its own art form.
Yes.
You know, letterers don't get enough credit for what they do. Good lettering in a comic, you don't notice it, even though you do. You read it, and it fits. A good letterer fits the topography with the art, and it is seamless.
Yes.
And so if you have a badly lettered comic, it takes the person out of the story and then they don't enjoy the comic. Ryan and I both decided that lettering wasn't our thing. We actually hire a buddy of ours. His name's Dave Lentz. He does a lot of comics for a lot of people. He's an amazing letterer. And he's going to be doing, you know, he did Rancidville. He's going to be doing Worst in Mayhem. I don't try to color everything, even though I can color and I'm decent at it. Ryan is much better colorist than I am. So he's going to be coloring it. And if he had time, he'd draw it too, because he's a better artist than I am. But, you know,
Ryan's over here shaking his head no and just like, what are you talking about?
No, nobody thinks they're any good. If you don't mind, John, what applications or procedures are you using?
So in 2020, I switched to doing most of my pencils digitally. I bought Cintiq then. And so I do a lot of my sketch. And I use Photoshop, Clip Studio, and now on an iPad, I use Procreate. I do a lot of sketching on my iPad in Procreate. So I do a lot of this. I do a lot of the original drawings digitally. I'd still sketch in my sketchbook and show Ryan a bunch of different ideas. But I really like doing stuff digitally because I can manipulate the drawing a little bit better.
Yeah.
And then I color in Photoshop, which I love now. I didn't at first, but Ryan got me in. And so I used to do a lot
the
of
relentless coloring. Pressure. Relentlessly applied.
Applied is what it is. Yeah. So those are the programs that I primarily use: Photoshop, Clip Studio, and Procreate. And then like for Worst in Mayhem, I'll print the pencils, and then I'll ink that traditionally.
I've never thought about.
We want to have original pages for Worst in Mayhem. People back the Kickstarter, they can get original art from the book. And we find that that's a, you know, I did that with Rancidville too. I inked all the pages traditionally, but I did all the pencils digitally after 2020.
Now, I got another question I didn't even think about before. When you have different people working in different parts, how do you send the work out, and how do you handle not getting files confused? Like, say if you have, you've got the thing done and you send it to the guy lettering, what do you send the letterer?
So we would send Dave a TIFF file, of and he would and then he would put the lettering over that in probably he uses Illustrator and then
he
would,
does InDesign. He's crazy. That's
oh,
how
he does it in InDesign. Yeah, and he'll send both of those files back. We'll get the InDesign file and a TIFF file back from him. And he'll keep it at the same size. So if we're like my pages, I draw at 11 by 17. I'll ink them at 11 by 17. I'll scan them in. Ryan will color them at 11 by 17. Dave will do the lettering, but at 11 by 17. So it's all kept together. And we use Dropbox, a shared folder,
yes,
for that. So everybody has access to that. And inside that, I'm kind of a folder freak. So I have like a folder for pencils and a folder for inks and a folder for colors and a folder for letters. So each step of the way, there's a folder for the actual next piece. So all of my inks are in a folder. All of my pencils are in a folder. Ryan
makes
will
sense.
Have all the colors in a folder. Yeah. Then Dave will put the finished letters in a folder. So then by the time we're done, the final version is in the last folder. There'll be a final print folder.
Yeah. So basically, when you guys get all the elements, you put them together yourself?
Yep.
Okay, that makes perfect sense to me. I just never thought of it until we started talking.
Sometimes Dave will actually put them together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to give him credit because he's a saint, man. I'm telling you how much I hate Illustrator. So when he gives me something back and I can't get it to work right, like he takes the time to talk me through it and like help me, like it's kind of like coaching, like a little bit, like, all right, this is what you're doing wrong. This is how you have to use Illustrator.
Right.
This is what you need to do.
That's really cool of him. That's
awesome.
He's so, actually local to us too.
Oh, wow, man. Oh,
yeah.
You guys got a whole clutch going on up there.
Yeah, the only person that's not local is our editor. He's in Colorado.
Okay.
His name's James Powell. He does a comic called House of Fear.
Yeah. That interests me. How did you guys, being independent artists, start using an editor? How did this come about?
Well, I've used an editor for a lot of different scripts that I've just done in the past. Like I hired out some stuff. I don't know if you're familiar with Comics Tribe at all, but
no.
Back in the day, they used to do a lot of like articles and stuff for newer comic writers and artists. So it was like when I first came into comics, like the reason why I didn't do comics for so long is because I didn't understand where to start. Like back then there was all of Chris Hart's like how to draw books, and they were all literally the same thing, but there was no information that was easily available for me to find. Like there weren't books. I tried, like back in the AOL days, I would Google search like comic book, you know, how to make a comic book, and like there weren't really stuff that came back up. I ended up stumbling across Comics Tribe through digital webbing. Like I found the digital webbing forums, and it was like literally one of the first posts I found on there. It was like, try to make comics, like here's where you start. And it was like, oh my God, it was eye opening. But they actually have a column on that page where two editors would do a couple pages of editing on a script. Like, so people would submit weekly and they would, you know, give feedback, and it was like a public critiquing forum. So the people weren't paying for professional editing. And I learned so much from that. In the end, before they stopped doing that column, I was actually on helping Stephen Forbes, and he would like pick out a panel that was written in a way that was very, that they would feel like be difficult for you to describe for an artist to draw. So it'd be like, okay, following the panel description, like, all right, I'm going to take a crack at what I think this panel would look like. And so like, I would give feedback on like, okay, this for me as an artist, like this is what I was missing. Like, I don't know I wasn't sure what to draw here. You know, there's no emotion and it's not, you know, whatever was missing in the panel description that I felt that I would need for my piece of the puzzle. So it was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome back in the day with Comics Tribe. You know, a lot of us didn't have that. Was I call that the birth of the internet days, you know, because that was really where it all got started. I remember I found DeviantArt off of Comics Tribe. people posting on there with links over to Deviant, which I know a lot of artists use for promotion and everything. But at what point did you say I'm comfortable now? Was there a particular class, particular thing that you guys did where you're like, I'm comfortable doing this, I'm going for it? Or was it the two of you pushing each other?
So, I mean, like, we were already both kind of started our books beforehand. I was working on Sunmaker because it was actually a script that had went through the Comics Tribe forums and was publicly edited. And it really resonated with me so much that I reached out to Liam. I was doing that for a little while, and then makingcomics.com, they had a massive open online course. So I had also been doing, like, I submitted my own script through Comics Tribe and got some critiques back. And besides Stephen Forbes, one of the other editors was Sam Labaugh, and she had edited some of my, like, I actually hired her outside of the Comics Tribe column, because I met her at New York Comic Con in 2013, and like the stuff that she said to me was really inspirational. So I had started working on my own book at the same time. And when Making Comics announced that they were going to have a massive open online course, it was basically geared towards people who were very new to comics and hadn't done any of this stuff before. So I brought the story that I had been working on and got publicly, like, started off with the public edit, and then I hired an editor. And so I was taking the next steps. Like, they were doing stuff like drawing maps. I think they might have had us doing scripts, character studies. I don't even remember everything. But John ended up taking the course too. And we weren't in the same group, but you would post in your group for feedback. And then they also had like a public thing. And not a lot of people posted a public thing, but I specifically remember John posting his map for Rancidville. And I was just like, man, that is so cool. Like, I love how the town's name is Rancidville. It's the river running through is this big R. It's like, that's legit. I got to give you props. And, you know, we would bump into each other on Twitter here and there, and be like, hey, you know, how's it going? And eventually, like, I don't even remember how it came up, but we end up finding out we live like literally like 40 minutes away from each other.
Yep. Yeah, that was in, so we met in 2014. That's when the MOOC was for makingcomics.com. And, you know, I remember seeing all Orion's stuff. There was us and only a couple of other people that ever posted publicly. Everybody else just kept their stuff in their group. You know, and we just branched out. I'm like, okay, I got feedback from my group. Now I want feedback from everybody else, right? And I had been working on, so the germinations of Rancidville started when I was still working at the newspaper, when I was still doing political cartoons, you know. And I just had, like recently with Worse Than Mayhem, Rancidville started with just a handful of characters and no real story. I just had people. So I had the main characters, I kind of had their personalities worked out, I kind of had like where I wanted them to be, but I really didn't have a story. And then that started developing over time, and that was, gosh, again, it was like 30 years ago, you know, where those ideas first started. And I never thought that I was going to be able to, now is the easiest time to be a creative person. You know, there's so many opportunities for creative people that were not available 30 years ago. You know, when I was in my 20s, 30 years ago, the internet didn't exist. You either had to know somebody or you had to go to some amazing school where you could know somebody to get into any type of industry that would let, to break in, right? And then with the advent of the internet, the possibilities just became endless. So in like 2012, I guess it was around 2012, it had to be 2012, 2013. It was before the MOOC. I started reading a web comic online called Remind by Jason Brubaker. And, he, not only was he putting his comic as a web comic, but he also had a blog. And each week, he would post his journey becoming a web comic artist. So he'd talk about, you know, developing fonts and the rules that he decided to establish for his world and how he was moving forward as a comic artist. And I thought, man, if this guy can do it and post it online, I can do that, you know? And so that's where it all started. And then I met Ryan, and then we started talking, and it was like 2015 where we realized, hey, we don't live very far away from each other at all, you know?
And now since then, it's kind of been like we met in the MOOC. We started talking online. When I had gotten one of the very first invites to List Launch, which was Tyler's first course, he made it because he did one round of the Comics Launch course. And a lot of the people had not had an email list. So somehow I got invited. It was a very, very small beta for the List Launch group. I'm thinking it might have been because I replied to a lot of the emails that Comics Launch sent out, so they knew that I was like a creator person and somebody that was like interested.
And he probably knew you from the Proving Grounds too.
That actually is a good point. That could be that too. But you know, so I got this invite to List Launch, which was building an email list, and eventually they opened it up for the course, like the full price course. So I told John, I was like, yo, I just signed up on this thing. I was like, it's about building an email list. I'm like, this sounds like a really cool idea. They're going to be opening up for the Comics Launch course, and we ended up both joining at the same time. And so like pretty much what we always have been doing is like one person takes a step and the other person's like, okay, well now we're going to do that. And like, what if we do this? And we do this and we pull each other along. And it's like, if you're doing this all by yourself, sometimes it can be so, creativity can be draining when you're trying to also like do it as an aspect, you know, or like working like, and just like the, it's very hard to push yourself out of your comfort zone. So having the other person being the one that's like, hey, you know, let's do this. You know, I've done a lot of stuff that I probably wouldn't have done if John hadn't done it. And I was like, yeah, you know, like now he's done it. It sounds really easy. Like, why am I not doing this too?
Right.
One thing though, both of you, before you got together, you got your work done. You had a project and you got each one done. To me, that's worth more than gold. I've been surrounded by people that have an idea, may start on it, may get some of it going, but they eventually just kind of trail off and forget it. Both of you on your own got projects done. Together, you just get them done better.
Yeah.
It never felt like we were alone. Like, even if we're not on the same creative team, like, John's just been as much of an inspiration and influence on Sunmaker. And I'm sure he says would say the same thing. Like, if I didn't have him one to hold me accountable, like he'll still do it. Like, you know, be like, hey man, like what's going on? I want this book. Like, you know, we're fans of each other's work. And we just like showing each other what we're working on. Like this stuff makes us exciting. Like, you know, comic work doesn't always pay like tons of money. Like, we're not like swimming in the Scrooge McDuck bin or anything crazy like that. But like, you know, I see John's passion that comes through his work, and it's awesome. And I'm not asking him because like I just want to make sure he's working. It's like, I can't wait to see what he's coming out with next.
Yeah, that's the best part of it. Just can't wait to see what the other person's doing. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ryan does a lot of you know, since he's taken a lot of coloring courses and really loves color, not only has he excelled as a colorist, but he's gotten really cool paid gigs to be a colorist, you know, not just our own work. He colors for crossover division. He does covers for other books. And I'm always like, what are you working on? Let me see it. You know, he'll be like, hey, I have this idea. And I'm like, and he'll just say, hey, I have an idea for this. And I'll explain it in a text, and I'm like, let me see it. I want to see what it is. You know?
Make me come over there.
Exactly. And it's always so cool. He's always got this amazing eye on weird, I want to call it weird perspective. We always call it forced perspective, right? We're always forcing a perspective that we want the viewer to see in the art. It's not really a true perspective, right? It's not real, because we both do a lot of cartoony style drawing. But it's so cool that you're just like, oh, let me see what you've got, you know? And it's just awesome.
Nice. So your next book you guys are doing together, do you have a launch date on that yet?
It's going to be pretty much whenever we're fulfilling the books that the Ranciville and Sunmaker.
Yeah.
We want to get that fulfilled, and we want to try to launch like immediately. I've always felt a very strong tactic that I've seen a lot of successful people do is like we work with Clay Adams from Fried Comics a lot, and he'll do a PBOW book or Dead Skins book, and you get one of the books from his thing, and it's like, inside is a little postcard, and it's like, hey, on this day we're launching whatever the next book is. And so like they're already receiving their package, and now they got a little thing that's telling you, hey, in 2 weeks, you know, there's another one. And watching them do this over and over again and seeing the consistency, like they have grown tremendously in. And I think that this is a big thing. Like, I think it's so smart, like, because they're working with great artists that are able to turn stuff around very quickly. But then they're using that to springboard the next thing. And that's kind of what we're hoping to do with the Worst of Mayhem, and why we want to do it, where as soon as you receive the rewards for Sunmaker and Ranciville, you got the comic. Like, we're hoping a lot of people back both books, because we had good success with that in the past. And so now they have it in their hands, they're reading it, and it's like, you can, 2 weeks from now, like, we're gonna launch this book.
Yeah.
So
August.
August.
So we're hoping for August.
No later than August.
John's already, he's almost done drawing book one already. And yeah. He has two short stories already drawn for like subsequent issues. And then he's like, he's already pretty much written issue two, and there's a whole lot of character sketches. We have the script prepped for issue three, like, yep.
And the synopsis and outline for issue four, and the idea for issue five and six are already done.
My God.
Yeah, wow. It's really taken off, and we wanted to have an editor this time around that was exceptional. And that's why we hired James Powell, because, you know, we know that what we're making is funny, and people are going to dig that it's funny, and there's a lot of humor, and there's a lot of foul language in it, and there's a lot of gore in it. It's going to be a kick-ass comic. But we wanted it to be the next level comic, not just something that we enjoy, but we wanted something that others will enjoy as much. And so having an editor on board makes sure that he's pointing out stuff to us and say, hey, this is funny, but is it really necessary? Or, you know, I see this. Is there something coming down? Because this doesn't make a lot of sense yet. Do you have something planned later in the story for this? You know, and so he pushes us. Taking it and pushing us to make it even better. And then each issue we have a short story plan, so it's kind of funny the way we did it. We have these ideas, but there's not enough of a story to make a whole book. So it's a short story in the book that furthers the next story. So it's not really part of the first story, and it's not part of the second story, but it's necessary to tell the whole story. So we have the first story, and then there's a six-page short story, and then the next book, and then there's an 8-page short story, and then the next book there's a 6-page short story, and so it kind of works out. And I have two of those short stories completely penciled already because they were fun. And yeah, we're excited, we're going after it. Our goal is to launch at least twice a year. So after this year, we want to launch book two and book three next year, and book four and five the year after. We also have some tertiary books planned. There's a little monster manual planned for it. There's a little cookbook planned for it. There's a lot of stuff that this world has expanded and grown. And just because Ryan's all, hey, wouldn't it be funny if we do this, you know, and then that just leads to so much. It's so much fun.
It's like somehow the book got written by me trying to say literally the dumbest thing I could say to John.
Yeah.
And then he'd be like, we're doing it.
Yeah.
Do you look back and go, oh, crap, what did I do?
but it's so random and it's so weird. And the idea, like, it wasn't even our plan to have, like, the whole core concept of the book be, like, the idea. It just ended up being, like, we kept asking why. And then we just picked the dumbest reason.
Yep. Yeah, we came up with all these weird, stupid things, and then we wove a story to connect them all. And it really is fun. It's really going to be – I think it's really going to break Kickstarter.
Well, it's our cry for help.
Yeah, I told you in the beginning of the conversation that I'm broken. So
that's why I was saying that.
All right, so – everybody's obviously going to be interested now. Where does everybody go to find the two of you on the internet so they can keep track and make sure they get these books?
All right, Ryan.
So my website's ryancrobot.com, and it has links to all my social medias. Makes it really easy. Good hub.
Yep. And mine's johneddingfieldii.com, and it's the same thing.
Nice.
Cool.
Yep.
Keep it simple.
We will obviously have links to all of this on our blog for everybody listening, so you can find it real easy if you want. Don?
If you like to draw, we're always in need of fake comic book covers to announce the new episode on the Facebook page and the Facebook group. We can't pay you for it because we have no money, and even if we did, we wouldn't give it to you. anything you want to do on it, I can format it to fit the cover. Please help a brother out, because I'm getting kind of scared where I'm starting to run out. If you're any kind of musician, singer, performance artist, I've said mimes in the past, if you can put it on MP3, we usually have a music break, unless like tonight we have a guest. I can keep playing the same stuff over and over again, but it really irritates Rook.
Yes, it does.
So, again, help a brother out. And we have a t-shirt. You can find it on the sidebar under merchandise. It's not to make us rich, because we wouldn't pass the money on anyway. It's just to help us with hosting fees, which are getting ready to come up. Listen to the show, wear the shirt. Rook?
Everybody, check out everything we talked about on this episode and other episodes at bunchofdorks.com. Click on that little Cyclops. But until next time, everybody.
Read
more
comics. You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Your Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.